Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I'm Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by Barnabas Piper and Ronald J. Martin. And boys, I'm getting excited about Live in Louisville. It's feeling real. It's feeling like this is going to happen. And given that it's a thing that we've been talking about for like 2.5 years, there's been a lot of buildup, boys. And we have received a donation of a block of tickets from a wealthy benefactor. And I know that this guy doesn't want attention drawn to him, so I'm not going to name his name. But he has purchased 10 tickets to Live in Louisville at a great cost to himself. And he's offering those tickets to students and ministry people in the greater Louisville area. So here's how this is going to work. If you send us a Facebook message with hashtag I'm with us in the subject line, and you say something fawning about us in the message itself, we will reserve a free ticket to Live in Louisville for you. So if you're a listener and you're in the greater Louisville area, you owe it to yourself and your family and your loved ones to reach out to us in this way and to be a good steward of your resources and of creation to grab one of these free tickets to Live in Louisville, because it is going to be bonkers. It's going to be the biggest event in anywhere.
You owe it to humankind, Ted, yeah. I think is what you're trying to say. You owe it to human life.
I do. And I don't want to put that kind of pressure on people, Ronnie, but you said it and I didn't and I was thinking it. So
I appreciate it.
There it is. We're being honest. We're being open. We're being upfront about that. So happyrantpodcast.com. Check out some info about Live in Louisville and then drop us a little face B message with hashtag I'm with us and you can get a free ticket to the event. And boys, we don't have any sponsors today, so we can kind of fast forward through the business, although there is always Ligaris Roasters Coffee. Again, happyrantpodcast.com. Grab yourself an order of Ligaris Roasters Happy Rant Signature Blend. But I want to get into some serious stuff today, guys. And I want to start with a post, a series of Gospel Coalition articles by my former colleague, Kevin DeYoung. My former partner in book writing, in which KDY suggested very, in a very polarizing and kind of provocative way that Christians should not watch Game of Thrones.
I'm not sure suggested is the term I would use.
He didn't suggest.
He laid down the pastoral authority hammer with those articles.
Man, he did. And we can dialogue about how he did that. But I have to say this about the content of what KDY said. And we can argue about this. We can argue about the way he said it. But I actually agree with every single thing that he said. And it's easy for me because I didn't love Game of Thrones anyway. I kind of tried it. I got maybe an episode into it, and I found it to be problematic in all the same ways that KDY found it to be problematic. And also it helped that I just didn't like the show. So it was an easy thing for me to bail on. One that I did like better, that I ended up bailing on for exactly the same reasons, was Boardwalk Empire. That was a show that just felt a little pornographic, and it became untenable for that reason. But KDY, if you haven't read the post, was essentially saying he can't think of a good reason why Christians should watch or would watch Game of Thrones. Game of Thrones, huge cultural object, huge topic of water cooler conversation in certain contexts. And he got a huge amount of blowback and feedback on these posts, as you can imagine. So, Pipe, I want to throw it to you first, and I want to get your feedback on A, what was said, and B, how it was said.
Yeah, the spirit of what KDY said, I agree with. I think, you know, and even how he said it. I mean, because he's not an acerbic, judgy kind of person in general. So he's not, you know, he's not out there and he's certainly not trying to spit hot takes.
Yeah.
And he waited till it was season 7 before he dropped this. So it wasn't, you know, he has reserved judgment for years and years. Mm-hmm. I have mixed feelings about saying should and shouldn't most of the time.
Sure.
Because there are matters of conscience, there are matters of tolerance, there are matters of how things are perceived and individual temptations that people struggle with. But as a general rule, if something glorifies anything that is anything evil, so not just depicts it, but glorifies it, and there is a difference, I think, mm-hmm. then I think there's not a good reason to watch it. I started watching the show Ballers on HBO because I love sports. I love Sports Agency. I love Dwayne Johnson. And I bailed on it after maybe half a season or just kind of the end of season one because for the same reason. It was just one of those things where it's like, this isn't just sort of depicting what is. It's sort of like it drawing attention to a lot of stuff that was, you know, softcore porn basically. And so I am fascinated with the arguments that people can watch it. And it's basically, it seems to come down to, you can't tell me what to do.
Interesting.
That's what I hear. I don't hear a ton of really well thought out arguments saying, this is why it's okay for my eyes and my soul to absorb incest and rape and just gratuitous amounts of sex, although my understanding is the show is less so now than it used to be. I don't know. It's hard to argue against him. It seems to me that what he said is true for almost everybody. There may be people who can find a good reason to invest in the show, but I haven't heard those arguments.
Hi, do you believe in Big R? You weigh in on this actually, because I want to hear your take on this. Do you believe that the guys especially who say, I can watch the show and it doesn't tempt me sexually to see all these images. Like I hear that and I think you're a liar.
Yeah, BS.
You're lying. Like, is there any of that like rings true? Is that even a thing?
No, I think that's a lie. I think that's impossible. I mean, that's saying that somehow we're not affected by the very, you know, mechanisms that like the devil has put in place, you know, as the very medium to draw us into our own lusts. I mean, that's absurd. Actually, that goes against what scripture clearly teaches, to be honest. I think that's absurd.
I think if people are saying that with sincerity, it probably speaks more to being desensitized as opposed to not tempted.
Absolutely.
Which is, I think that's probably, I mean, and I've been in that place before where I'm like, well, it's not that tempting. Yeah, that's because you're tempted by worse things. So like this is the gateway drug to worse things. And so, you know, if you've been in a place where you struggle with like real pornography, then this may not really be tempting because you're like, been there, done that, not that interesting. So I think if a guy claims to not be tempted, in my mind, that's a red flag, but there's probably something else going on there that he's probably in deeper than he thinks he is.
And Pipe, that's good commentary. I mean, even how you just said that, you know, and I know you were saying that, I'm guessing with quotes, but you know, just to call this not real pornography when, you know, there was a time when this was, you know, this would have been clearly sort of categorized under.
Yeah, it would have been called a snuff film back in the day.
You know, yeah, like for real. So I think what you're saying about that whole idea of being desensitized, because we become desensitized really quickly and really easily. That's something like we are drawn to being desensitized so that we can justify, you know, going further into things that aren't healthy or helpful for us. My thing was when Katie White has the two posts that I've seen. I agree with everything that you fellas are saying. I'm totally on board with all of it. Did not disagree with KDY on any level. I did, however, think that the first post, given kind of the standard that KDY has sort of built up for his writing and his thought process, I thought it was kind of thin, to be quite honest. Even though I didn't agree with it, I felt like it lacked some depth. It felt like something that he wrote in about 4 minutes and it was just reactionary. Maybe it was a conversation or just some kind of a, you know, just some kind of an impression he had as he was, you know, reading like Twitter posts on the new season.
He saw one too many tweets from people in his church or people who he respects. Possibly.
Yeah. And I just thought like his rat, I, again, agreeing with it, I thought the way he laid out his rationale felt really thin, but then his follow up where he did his, you know, again, the standardized TGC 12 pointed, like, you know, version of it. Like I thought that had some depth. I thought that had some, you know, I thought that had some claws, you know, in it that
I actually found the first post refreshing because of the typical TGC, like why use 200 words when 12,000 will suffice? Like I actually thought the directness was really refreshing. And it was really clear what he was trying to say. And again, like, yeah, I'm with you, Big R. I can find no fault in really what he said or the way he said it. But let me pose this question to you guys. And this is something that KK brought up last night when I was talking with her about it. because she knew we were going to talk about it on the show. I think, and again, caveating this to high heaven in that I totally agree with what Katie Y was saying, but I do think there's something germane in the reformed approach to things to want to create more law. And I think this speaks to what Pipe was saying in the beginning where, you know, you're kind of unease with saying should or shouldn't. I think it's kind of a natural way to lean for us in our camp that we do kind of want to create more law. Do you guys think that's real?
Yeah, I think it is. And I think, you know, that's a tricky one because when reformed people take sin very seriously, you know, the idea of sin, the reality of sin. Mm-hmm. And so if you're going to label things as sinful, you are therefore abiding by some law. Mm-hmm. The difficulty comes when you start to draw hard lines where they may not have been handed out by God. Although granted, I think looking at women's naked bodies for entertainment is that
totally
would be considered
sinful. Totally agree. But I guess what I meant by that is the tenor of this conversation has taken on the same tenor that you'll get reformed guys posting. You can set your watch by this about twice a year on why Christians shouldn't watch like boxing or MMA. And that to me falls more into the category of laws that we're making up. Whereas what Kevin wrote, I think falls really well into the category of just affirming things that the Bible already says. Do you get what I'm saying?
Well, yeah, okay, so here, oh, sorry, Pipe.
No, go ahead, Ronnie.
Man, you know, I'm with you, Big T. I think what's interesting about this is because we now have the ability, whether we're pastors or authors or, you know, anybody that's, you know, in a position of authority, should we be posting these things to mass audiences or is this, so here's the question from me, was this something that should have just gone out to Katie Y's congregation, right? So there was a sense where it's like he's wrist slapping. Mm-hmm. Who is he wrist slapping, right? Because again, like you're not under him pastorally, Pipe's not under him, I'm not under him pastorally, and yet he was kind of doing this pastoral wrist slap. So the question you have to ask is like, what is that line for him to come? I mean, that was a pastoral blog, right? To come out and say, hey, do this, don't do that. I don't understand why you should be doing this. We could agree with the sentiment behind it, but you always got to ask like, man, should this have just gone out to his people?
Interesting. Pipe, what do you think about that?
I think if you're a local church pastor, that should be your first concern, is always the people who are in your flock. I think in this day and age that, you know, his sermons are probably podcasted and somebody would take an open letter that he wrote to his church and publish it online. And so the end result might've been the same, just mm-hmm. a little bit more grassroots, but yeah, putting it on the Gospel Coalition website on his blog is a, you know, it's a different platform. I think, and I also think with this sort of cultural phenomenon, at least amongst upper crust white people, that Game of Thrones is, addressing it publicly seems fair because it's a public thing. You know, this wasn't just a thing that was happening within his church. I did have a thought when you're talking about creating more laws. And, you know, I recognize this in my own life. And so, and that is when, so Katie Y puts out this article that says why Christians shouldn't watch Game of Thrones. I don't watch Game of Thrones. I now have an opportunity to feel superior to those who do. Mm-hmm. And that's, or at least that's my temptation, is, oh, good, I don't do that. And you sort of fall into that Pharisaical, you know, thanking God that I'm not like that tax collector or that Game of Thrones watcher over there. Mm. And that's where I think the creation of law becomes really insidious, because even if it's a good law, like I think don't watch softcore porn is a really good law. I think handling it the way that we often do in our reformed world creates an opportunity for us to go, well, I don't do that, so I'm okay. Mm. Not realizing the superiority and pride sin that you've just firmly planted yourself in.
Mm. That's a great point.
That is a great point, yeah.
And I think that's a much more eloquent way of saying what I was trying to get to with the law question, because it does invite that kind of response. And I think just like people are tempted to different things, I guess it hadn't occurred to me. Like it hadn't occurred to me to feel superior that I don't watch Game of Thrones. But
if I just tempted you to feel superior by bringing it up.
No, I don't, because I think I feel miserable about enough other things that it balances it out from day to day. But, you know, so it's truly not a temptation. But to your point, Big R, about the about it being appropriate or not appropriate, I think as far as pastoral things go, operations like GECO have really kind of blurred the line of what is or isn't pastoral, because GECO, for better or for worse, has become sort of the, it's the place to get pastoral wisdom for people who have crummy pastors. But it's also the place for, you know, pastors to debate about things and argue about things. And yeah, it really has blurred those lines. I remember when I went to Kevin's church years ago, before there was a gospel coalition and before he had a writing career, he would write these sorts of things and print them out and put them in people's mailboxes at church. And 9 times out of 10, it was the kind of thing that all of us, I think, felt thankful for, you know, like, you know, we were forced to think about issues that perhaps we hadn't thought about. And the other 1 time out of 10, it may have felt like heavy-handed, you know, lawmaking, but by and large, it was a good thing.
Yeah. And I don't think, and so to that point, I mean, I don't think there is certainly not anything wrong with, I mean, look, he has a social media platform. There's, technically, we can go back and forth on what he should or shouldn't post, but really he can kind of post whatever he wants as long as it falls under, you know, something that is, you know, within the realm and the place that God has given him to talk about the things he talks about. So I think this does. I don't have a problem with that at all. I just wonder that some of the people that really push back against him on some level, it's like, well, hey, what would happen if you went and had a conversation with your pastor about that? Would he just mimic the words of KDY? If he's an evangelical dude and he's conservative, he probably will. So are you just pushing against Kevin because he's put himself in a place of authority by virtue of his platform that you just don't want to receive? You know?
Yeah. And that's a valid point. And I think it's a position that Kevin has put himself in. And it's also a position that I don't think bothers him a whole heck of a lot. You know, I think he's uniquely equipped to like take the pushback and kind of roll with it in a way that I certainly wouldn't want to deal with it. But he is able to deal with it. So
yeah,
maybe that means he's the guy to do stuff like this. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I'll tell you this though, from a business standpoint, if you're GECO, you're stoked out of your mind, right? Yeah. I mean, this is the perfect blog post. It's cultural. It hits a wide swath of society. It's titillating in terms of the headline. Like this is a killer, you know.
Gotta be careful using that word when talking Game of Thrones.
Yeah, exactly. But this is the kind of blog post that pays the bills in the middle of all those other kind of boring, staid theological blog posts that can sometimes populate the site as well. Anything else to say on this, boys, before we move on?
What I would love to see is somebody, I would love to see Gospel Coalition put it up, if somebody could write it, an equally thoughtful defense of watching Game of Thrones that actually responds to the moral components, not the artistic components. You know, because otherwise you're sort of weighing apples and oranges separately, where you're saying on the one hand, we should not be taking in this kind of content. And on the other hand, yes, but there's redemptive value in the artistry of it, or the worldview, or the thought provoking nature of it. Yeah. And I don't, you know, so I would love to see somebody respond with that, not necessarily in a, you know, 12,000 word article, but something thoughtful, something gracious, something biblical, and see so that it allows people to choose instead of allowing people to be told should or shouldn't, sort of in a compulsory way.
It would be interesting to see if what you just described could even be done.
Right.
It would be interesting to see who would even do it, actually.
You know that guy's out there, though. I mean, you know there's a Reformed pastor who's thoughtful and intelligent who's watching Game of Thrones. That guy exists. But whether he's willing to, like, say that out loud or not is a totally different matter. But it would be interesting. And I agree.
Does he need to have the same platform as KDY to do it, though, for it to have that kind of an impact, for it to be like the pushback? Yeah. I mean, does it need to be Tabidi? You know, does it need to be somebody whose blog is already getting pushed on TGC? I don't know.
It probably would need to be.
Yeah.
Or else it was, you could just write it off as, this is a dude who's not as thoughtful or accomplished as another dude. You know right. what I mean?
Yeah, because right. we all know that platform equals wisdom. And so the larger the platform, the smarter somebody is. So we need somebody who is equally as smart.
Finally, as something we're all agreed on. Moving yeah, on.
Exactly. Exactly. Somebody with a blue check. That's what I'm looking for.
You know, I think that
I can't write it. Sorry, guys.
That's not even a question, Big T. Obviously, you'd have to have a blue check to even like engage in that kind of a conversation. That's why I could never write it. You know, I could never.
How's your pursuit of the blue check going? How's your life changed since you realized that was a thing? Which I'm not entirely like believing that you didn't know what a blue check was before last week, but that's neither here nor there. But how is your life? Is your life any different knowing that there's a thing out there that you could have that you don't have right
Baby,
now?
Baby, I have a heart that hurts right now after what you just said. I mean, I have something beating in there that is now going through this thing we call pain. I'm telling you, as one of your closest, deepest friends, I had no clue what a blue check was.
I believe you, baby. As much as I struggle to believe that, I do believe.
As much as you struggle, I know you're trying hard right now.
I'm trying hard because of what you just said about
I appreciate the effort to try to console me right now in my moment of grief. Okay. I appreciate that. I feel like maybe, you know, I need to add this to the stack of things that are missing and lacking in my life. And the fact that me and you sit here with a gentleman that's part of our podcast that actually has one of those checks. There's a lot of conflicting things going on inside right now. I'm not going to lie to you about that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? So I don't know. I don't know what to do about that. I don't know
what kind of emotional wasteland you've been wandering around in for the last week.
I considered quitting Twitter 4 or 5 times. I considered quitting the podcast. I mean, I wondered when I was going to hear from, that person unknown and unnamed that we were riffing about, you know? Yeah. So there was a lot going on after that. It's been a rough week since that last podcast.
By the way, as a show, we need a covenant with each other to track that unnamed gentleman such that when he does get his blue check, there needs to be some kind of celebration.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, if it happens before live in Louisville, I mean, I'll get a sheet cake, you know, I mean, we're going to do something big for that, right?
Let's call it a sheet cake. I mean, we need a covenant together with the sheet cake that this is going to be a thing. If and on the sheet cake, you're gonna have to be real explicit with the person who's decorating, but I just want a giant blue check on it.
That's all it'll be. It's a giant blue check with maybe with the Twitter handle.
With the Twitter handle.
With the Twitter handle. And I got to tell you something, Big T. I love hearing you say covenant together the 9 or 10 times you've said it in the last like minute. I mean, there's something like special about that really warms me.
We are a Christian podcast. So
Can you say it one more time just for everybody? Because I like it.
Baby, would we do anything but covenant together? So what I'm doing there rhetorically is saying it in a way that makes it more than just let's the three of us get a sheet cake, right? Because that sounds shallow to me.
It does sound shallow.
Anybody can do that at any grocery store bakery. That is not a special thing.
Anybody can get a sheet cake. But when I say covenant together to get a sheet cake, I think you both feel the weight of what we're doing in a different and special way.
I'm thinking, I mean, this is just dawning on me, but I'm thinking that live in Louisville, and by Louisville, I mean Louisville, is not really going to, I don't think it's going to be complete now without a sheet cake. You know, I'm feeling like that's something that needs to get added to the program, right?
Maybe we can get a sheet cake sponsor.
Or maybe somebody wants to bring a sheet cake with the blue check. How about that?
I'm feeling kind of jaunty. I'm feeling like, you know what? We are media moguls. We don't pay for our own sheet cake. Are you kidding me?
I mean, there's no way there's no way any of us are paying a dime for the sheet cake.
What is this, amateur hour? I don't pay for my own sheet cake.
We have covenanted together to not pay for that blue check sheet cake.
Exactly. So here's a challenge. Somebody make a sheet cake appear at Live in Louisville.
You bring a blue check sheet cake to Live in Louisville and we'll let you in for what? Free?
Free.
Free.
Boom. Yep.
And if you bring one with the hashtag I'm with us on it, you can bring friends for free. Because if we had 2 sheet cakes, one with a blue check and one with hashtag I'm with us, it would be complete.
I love the energy in the room right now.
Oh, man.
This is exciting. We're doing business. We're making decisions. And I fear, fellas, that this next topic might suck some of the energy out of the room. And I'm just going to put that out there preemptively. But there was a hurricane. It happened. It was in Houston. And you guys want to talk about like Joel Osteen's involvement in that, which you know, full disclosure is a thing that I know nothing about. So who wants to get us started? Big Art, you're a man of the cloth. He's a man of the cloth. Do you want to get us started on this?
Oh, dude, I don't know, man. Okay.
I'm assuming you put that in scare quotes. Right?
Yeah.
Well, he's a man of the cloth. Are we sure?
Yeah, I know. I'm actually wearing a blue sweatshirt right now. So it's a
certain kind of cloth.
It's, yeah, exactly. Yeah. So this is a sensitive ish, right? And I think we need to, you know, at least be careful in the way that we talk about this. This is not like a great, you know, celebratory thing that's going on in Houston by any stretch. I think it's been interesting. Pipe and I were talking about this off the air. I think it's interesting. You know, Babylon Bee kind of came out with some of their ha-ha, you know, with Joel Osteen's sort of this idea that he has this massive church and he hasn't been opening it up to anybody to come in and use as a sanctuary, a safe haven. And so there's been a lot of criticism towards our boy J.O. about these things. And so Babylon Bee kind of posted some funny stuff. They kind of received some pushback on that. So
does Osteen, just to be clear, does he have his own building? Because I thought he was meeting in like Reliant Stadium for a while. Like,
I think he owns Reliant Stadium.
Yeah, they bought the old Rockets arena. So the Rockets built a new one a few years ago, and they own the former. So it's, a basketball arena.
Big T, you're correct. Answer correct. Yes, they are, and they own it. Yeah. And so I don't know. He's, you know, it's one of these things Pipe and I were talking about, and Pipe, you can feed into this, but you know, it's interesting that when we, you know, these natural catastrophes, they kind of hit and it's like, man, we're so quick to jump, right? We're so quick to, we don't even give people a minute to like, you know, get their heads together. And we're just quick to criticize because we want to find somebody at fault. And so I think it brings up all kinds of questions about, you know, kind of our social media and like how we do these things and you know, just where our hearts are at with all these types of things. But again, I don't know, it's sensitive territory here. I don't know, Pipe, where do you come at it with?
Yeah, you made the point off the air that when we have decided, we being collective conservative evangelicalism, although in Osteen's case, it's gone a little bit broader than that. When we've decided that we don't like somebody, they can do no right. The two best examples are Joel Osteen and Rob Bell. Not a single thing they say or do will ever be viewed in any positive light by people in our church camp, our Reformed camp, because that's, they've just been blacklisted. And so, you know, setting aside the facts of the issue, like I don't know all the facts. I saw a reporter who looked into it, and it sounds like their facility is not even capable of hosting people right now because it's surrounded by water and their entire parking structure is underwater and so on and so forth. So it's a disaster. Mm-hmm. Setting aside all of that, it seems to me that there was a fairly ungracious response to, like, he had, in less than 12 hours, was already being raked over the coals for not being the savior of Houston. And that seems unfair. And I'm blocked by Joel Osteen on Twitter because of all the jokes I make about him for the just asinine things that he says. But I still think it was a little bit unfair to just be like, how is he not this? Instead of finding out whether or not it was even a realistic option, for example.
Right, right. Huh. Well, you know what's interesting about this topic? I don't know that there's a whole lot more to say about it than what we've just said, unless I'm totally missing something.
Well, I did see somebody tweet something really funny where they tweeted something about Joel Osteen and said, Joel Osteen's church is not equipped to deal with the rising tides. They're only equipped to deal with the rising tithes.
Wow.
So I slow clapped that tweet. And because it made me laugh, even if it was, you know, untimely and insensitive, it was still funny.
Oh, man. Well, boys, I want to end us with something a little bit lighter. And this was a Big R suggestion. Big R, I feel like you were emboldened last week. Something got into you.
What happened?
You know, you brought a level of energy and excitement to the program that, you know, was noteworthy. And you continued that energy and excitement by suggesting three topics in our pre-production meeting for this week. And it was, to be fair, it was three more topics than I suggested. But one of your topics,
because I loved it because I didn't have to go like scrounging for topics from listeners who, when I ask for them, tend to send us their pet peeves as opposed to actual topics.
That's so funny. It's like validate my pet peeve, you know, yes. Agree with me, which in and of itself is a funny thing that we could talk about. But Big R, the very first topic that you suggested, and I feel like you've got firsthand on the ground experience with this as a man of the cloth, and it's timely. Because Taylor Swift just released a new track, and it's all the buzz, right? A lot of dialogue about it. But your topic was older dudes who think they're shocking everyone because they actually love Taylor Swift. Now, I want to ask you, where does that topic come from? Like, what's the genesis of that topic for you?
You know, there's always been, you know, because I've been involved in like snobby, you know, indie rock for, you know, half my life. Right. So there's always been this kind of this thing, and it's more now that we're living in the age of irony. Yes. And because people can talk about it more blatantly and they can get it out there to the masses. You know, there's always this kind of thing where, you know, it kind of goes back into some of those guilty pleasure kind of, you know, eps that we've done. So this kind of fits under that a little bit, but it's kind of these dudes that just say, hey, for real, everybody, like I'm super pumped for the new T-Swift single. No. Honestly, believe me, I actually buy her records. No. For real, I actually like her. I'm a fan. And we're all supposed to just be really shocked that they actually listen to a pop star that like quadrillions of people listen to. Like there's nothing really amazing about that. You know what I mean? Like the equivalent of that would have been in 1989, somebody going, dude, no, really, I bought the new Madonna record. It's like, yeah, right. You and the rest of the known world that can get to a record store, right?
And maybe so, is part of it like, is part of the hipsterness life cycle kind of the idea that the most ironic thing you can do now is pretending or actually liking, yeah, one of the most sort of banal pop stars imaginable?
No, it's actually the other way around, Big T. It's okay. So an indie dude would be like, yeah, I've bought everything that T-Swift has ever done. The production values are awesome. It's great.
You
love it.
Your like, hat on the production values.
Like unapologetically, like dude, a song's a song. I listen to, you know, I like the producer that worked with her. So you can go all there. These are dudes that are just pop music listeners anyway, but they think that there's something about sort of claiming somebody like T-Swift is something that nobody could have guessed about them. And you just go, dude, it's no big deal. Like literally everybody in the world's going to buy that new Swift single. You know what I mean? She's that big. Like she's crossed over into just like everybody has a gallon of milk in their fridge right now. Yeah. And you're going to listen to that Swift single, right? It's like not that big of a deal, but there's just this kind of thing where everybody's looking for, you know, some of these kind of dudes are looking for the reaction, right? They're looking for the reaction. And I just find it to be really, really interesting.
What's the reaction? Like what kind of social currency is that giving you? That I guess that's the part I don't get.
I don't know. I think it's more of the shock and awe. It's the no way.
I think these are the same guys who like 10 years ago thought it was countercultural or like they were showing something bold by like wearing light pink shirts. You know? It's sort of the equivalent to that where it's like, no, it's fine to wear pastel colors. Like, that's not a big deal, guys. But they're like, no, like, I don't know if I'm losing my man card by putting on this lavender polo shirt. And like, no, you're not. It's a shirt. And that's, I feel like it's sort of the same thing where there's, I don't know if it's an insecurity in masculinity or a just sort of like a latent almost sexism where they're like, this is girls' music, but I like it.
Yeah.
And so it's sort of a bold thing. And I'm like, yeah, no, you're not wearing a skirt in public. That would be bold. This is Taylor Swift. They're not the same thing.
Yeah. And I think, yeah, and that's really, I mean, that's good, Pipe. I think, you know, it's like speaking the language of like what a 14-year-old would be thinking right now, right? Some dude who knows he shouldn't like that new Swift single, but he actually likes it and he's going to listen to it when nobody's around and nobody sees he's listening to it. But like anybody that's part of the over 30 crowd, like you kind of don't care what anybody thinks you like or don't like anymore.
You don't
right?
really I mean, get called gay or girly for liking certain things anymore. Like if I heard a grown man say he liked eating quiche for breakfast, mm-hmm. I wouldn't mock him for it. But at 15, I would have been like, that's really girly.
Dude, because we know how good quiche is.
I actually don't like quiche, but I dislike the taste. It's not that I dislike the impression of
the quiche. The concept of it. Yeah.
You know, it seems like there's sort of that, yeah, there's like that latent adolescent boy insecurity there where it's like, guys, guess what this crazy, I just bought this single by a really popular female
pop star. You know who these dudes are? These are the same guys that are calling their wife their bride and talking about how hot she is in public. There's the same guy.
Probably a lot of truth to that, Big T.
There's a lot of overlap, man. If you take the two groups, there's a ton of overlap.
I don't know. It's just so, I don't know. I'm being real ranty about it. It doesn't matter at all, but it's something that I see. And I guess given my background, I just kind of go, really? Like, yeah. Dude, who cares? It's like, if it's a good song, it's a good song. Who cares? It's the ultimate who cares, right?
Let's end the program with this. I'm going to ask this question to you both. What do you think of the new Taylor Swift single? You've both listened to it. I know you have.
I have.
What do you think of it?
I have. I think it's pretty mediocre for her. I think she's written some good singles. I don't think this is one of her standouts.
I'll tell you what I loved about it, baby. I loved the artwork that went with it. The kind of like 1950s ingenue thing with the like sort of newsprint in the upper right corner. I dug that.
Yeah, I thought that was cool. Yeah.
I thought that was really cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm with you on the song. I was kind of like a
it's a okay. I mean, there's not the chorus is pretty monotonous. It's one note. Mm-hmm. The verses are kind of good. You know, they kind of lead you into that chorus, which kind of leaves you hanging. And I'm not a fan of that. I like the big choruses. And so that's kind of the trend right now, what she's doing. So she's right in the ballpark with everything that's going on. Well, of course she is because she's a pop star and that's what they do. But, and there's some interesting production values to it. There really is, but generally speaking, it hasn't been super well received, but it's more because they're really angry about her lyrics and this sort of victimization card that she continues to play, that she keeps kind of, you know, moving forward with as a way to define herself. And people are just tired of her right now. They're tired of hearing this sort of the same lyric coming out of her mouth. And so she's actually getting picked on, not because of the song itself, but because of the lyrics. And so there's just a whole thing surrounding her. But like you just said before, is this going to be good? It's great press for her on the heels of a new record. It's awesome.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, and here's the thing. She has reached sort of the critical mass of popularity where it doesn't matter if she puts out crap music. I didn't love it, but I also don't love most pop music. Like pop as a style is not a thing that I gravitate towards. I mean, it's catchy. It's fine, but it's just not my favorite. But think about like the whole genre of like bro country. You got Luke Bryan and Florida Georgia Line. That's trash music. It's terrible. Mm-hmm. But they've reached this critical mass that they can continue to put out trash music and make boatloads of money on it. And so Taylor Swift is kind of at the same place. What's disappointing is like she used to be creative. And I feel like that this song didn't sound as creative. Not the lyrics, not the song itself. It was just kind of boring.
Well, boys, it was a foregone conclusion that we would end up talking about Taylor Swift on this program.
Absolutely,
you know it was not if but when, and
it happens almost every week. It's not often Katie Y and Taylor Swift book in the podcast.
Dude, that's crazy because boy, if I had a nickel for every conversation that started with Katie Y and ended with Taylor Swift, I would be rich. You know, I mean, I guess I'm just rich in. The knowledge of that happening.
You'd be a $5 heir. I mean, holy cow, man. You would be rolling in those dollars, man.
Baby, I'm going to be rolling in those dollars after Live in Louisville.
Well, there's no doubt about that.
Believe. It's going to be like Mayweather McGregor up in
it
there.
It is.
I hope I'm rolling in sheet cake after Live in Louisville.
How about both? Can we ever just have our cake and eat it? Boom. I would like the sheet cake and the money. I mean, I'm not alone.
I want to roll in money and sheet cake. I want to be rolling around in both things.
Absolutely.
I feel like that's a Floyd Mayweather kind of conceit. So apologies.
I want to be rolling around in money and sheet cake.
That may have been his victory party. Actually, rolling around in money and sheet cake. I can.
And you know who was rolling around in a sheet cake with him? Conor McGregor, because that's what the fight looked like to me. It looked like two rich guys doing a business deal on television, and I felt like a schmuck for watching it.
Baby, that's exactly what I thought. Baby, I'm just kidding. I didn't watch it at all. I have no idea what you're talking about.
You're too good for it.
I am too good for it. And you know that.
He's just working on his 14,000 word TGC post on why Christians should not watch boxing because it's violent.
The problem is I get to about word 14 and I give up because I'm bored. So that I don't do well with
that's how I feel reading a lot of those posts.
Exactly.
It's just out of control.
We can all agree on that. Boys, we have wandered to and fro throughout this podcast, and I've enjoyed it. And I look forward to our Louisville blue check sheet cake. So if you're so inclined, get to work on that. And until next time, Rachel the Held Evans.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
You're fearfully and wonderfully made. God looks at your heart, not your jean size. Do you know the verses, yet still stress over your body? Oh, I get it. I was raised in church, but I struggled with food, eating disorders, and my body for decades. I'm Heather Creekmore, host of the Compared to You podcast, where we talk about all things body image and comparison from a biblical perspective. We get real about the pressure to focus on appearance in a culture where looks seem to matter most. Whether you're wrestling wrinkles or battling the scale, Compared to Who is the show for you. You'll laugh a little and be encouraged a lot. If you're ready to stop comparing and start living, visit lifeaudio.com to listen and subscribe.